Hey, everybody. I'm Tony Sweet. Captain Ron didn't make it today, but we're excited to have on Truth Be Told. It's been a couple weeks since we've had a Truth Be Told show, and we are excited to have him back. This is one of our favorite topics, the Knights Templar. This is a former guest of ours, Bill Mann. He wrote a brand new book. It's titled, ready for this, The Last Refuge of the Knights Templar. The ultimate secret of the Pike's letter. Well, I'm excited about this. So please welcome back to Truth Be Told, Bill Mann. How you doing?
Good, Tony. How are you?
Well, I'm excited. I'm great, but I'm excited to have you back because every time you put out a book, it's always bringing something new, something interesting, and it's hard to believe that we can take something as Knights Templar, who's been around for thousands of years, and open up new doors that we're always seem to finding. So thank you for doing your research.
Oh, you're welcome. You're very welcome. And let me say, I always like being interviewed by yourself.
Because thank you.
I always find you quite intelligent and quite free-minded and very logical and reasonable, and it's always great to be interviewed by people like that.
Thank you so much, and I'm gonna record that and put it on my phone and have that to wake up to every morning. Okay. All right. So we are excited because with this new book, you have some new information that and I noticed that this is a little different than some of your other books. And can you kind of tell us the direction you went with this book, The Last Refuge, and kind of made it different from your other novels that you did?
Well, what's really interesting about this is about 6 years ago, I discovered within sort of the long lost archives of the Grand Chancellery of the Sovereign Great Priory of Canada.
Right.
I discovered this folder, and it was contained a series of letters from Albert Pike. And for your listeners who are not aware of Albert Pike's background, it's interesting. He's quite an enigmatic guy. He was a Confederate general. Mm-hmm. At one point, he was Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan of Arkansas. And he was also a Knight of the Golden Circle. And those credentials are really quite interesting. But in essence, following the Civil War, he spent the last 30 years of his life trying to, I think, redeem himself in terms of not only a spiritual journey,
right,
but a very arcane and esoteric journey. So these letters, in essence, hadn't been seen for over 100 years, I believe. So I realized that these letters written to the Supreme Grand Master at the time of the Sovereign Great Priory here in Canada, Pike's equivalent, would in actual fact held certain levels of information relating to my earlier research in terms of the Knights Templar in the New World.
Well, let me ask you this. Pike, you know, I think this is almost like National Treasure, the movie. I don't know if you remember seeing those movies, but they kind of reminds me of this, how something that's so significant to American history, even world history, but American history especially, that this information can be hidden for so long. Because even Pike was not very well known in history books.
And why
do you think that is?
Not at all.
Why do you think that is? Because he was so important to American history.
Well, he's so important to American history, but what he's more important to is essentially Freemasonry within America. And Albert Pike, anybody who is initiated within the Scottish Rite Masonry of the Southern Jurisdiction of the USA receives his sort of magnum opus in terms of his writings, Morals and Dogma, Scottish Rite Freemasonry. And in essence, what he did is over a period of about 30 years, he reconstructed a variety of degrees into what we now know as the 32 degrees of Scottish Rite Freemasonry.
Right.
He was quite a spiritualist. He was a linguist. He was an advocate for Native American rights. He was, as I say, he was a very enigmatic fellow, to the point that I think he's not as well known as, say, Robert E. Lee or some of the other Confederate generals.
Well, with Pike being a Confederate, which was really surprisingly, first of all, I'm real curious of how Freemasonry and even Knights Templar, how North and South fought against themselves, but was there a lot of Confederates that were Freemasons and vice versa, North, or is it mostly Northern?
No, absolutely. I would say that at the time during the Civil War, there were probably more Southern Freemasons than the North. But Freemasonry is such that it wouldn't identify a boundary per se. You had brothers fighting brothers during the Civil War. You had Masons fighting Masons. There's a beautiful statue of a fallen Mason being comforted, a fallen Southern Mason being comforted by a Northern Mason at Gettysburg. And it really reflects on what Freemasonry is about. It really talks about equals in all nature of your life and your spiritual journey.
So when the Civil War was over, how was the bringing the two back together? Like Pike, did they shun the Southern Freemasonry, or did they just welcome them back into the lodges?
This is the really interesting thing. Pike was made Sovereign Grand Commander of Southern. He was made Sovereign Grand Commander of the Southern jurisdiction prior to the war. He was, in essence, accused of being sort of one of the co-conspirators of the Lincoln assassination, and he fled to Canada after Civil War. And was harbored by a number of high-ranking Canadian Freemasons, but in three short months, he was back being reinstalled as Sovereign Grand Commander in Washington D.C. So there's been a lot of conspiracy theories surrounding Pike. So in essence, you were asking why I chose to write about the letters and to incorporate the letters into a fictional story. Right now, it's kind of interesting. About 6 months ago, I did an interview where I was saying that I'm really surprised, that especially with the Black Lives Movement and all the protests going on in the States, that Pike's statue hadn't been torn down. It was in a prominent position in Washington, D.C., just off the Pall Mall there. And when you know it, about 2 weeks later, his statue was torn down because somebody finally figured out he was a Confederate general.
Oh my God! I was going to ask you about the Black Lives Matter and all these Confederate military statues being torn down. Was there a lot of them dealing with the Freemasons, and how did the Freemasons feel about that?
Well, really, Pike's statue was the only one associated with Freemasonry per se. A lot of the Confederate generals were Freemasons, but they're portrayed as being Confederate generals. On the other hand, Pike's statue was in essence depicting him within his Freemasons garb. And as I say, it took a number of people probably 3-4 months to realize the background of Pike himself. And this is the most fascinating thing. Pike was a constitutional lawyer, and one of the reasons he became associated with the Confederacy, although he was born in the North, was that he was one of the utmost constitutional experts at the time, and he believed in the freedom of the individual states over the federal government in terms of dictating, and he believed that the Federalists, the Northern Federalists, from an economic point of view, they were using slavery, the issue of slavery, to their advantage to depress the Southern economy to the point that obviously the South rose against the North.
Well, you've taken these letters, and it's just fascinating that you got your hands on them and got the chance to read them, but even though the basis of the book is authentic to his letters, you felt the need to wrap the hidden meaning of the letters with a fictional story. Why the heck did you do that?
Well, because I realized very quickly what, during Pike's time, what he was experiencing and what he was trying to conceal would have relevance in the modern era. And unfortunately, I have to say that being Canadian, I'm sort of off on the sidelines, but I'm witnessing a lot of things that are happening in the States that happened 150 years ago. In essence, history is repeating itself, which is unfortunate in, mm-hmm. in a way. I just felt that I should fictionalize the story around these letters so that the reader can decide to what degree the letters are real. In that manner, I wouldn't open myself up to accusations of siding with one side or the other in terms of modern day politics.
Well, and how did you, again, repeat how you found these letters and how you, was it through the lodge that you were with, archives, or, and if so, how did you get your hands on it? I mean, how was that, how did somebody miss that for 100 years?
Well, currently I'm Supreme Grand Master of the Knights Templar
of Canada. That helps.
That helps. But at the time, about 7 years ago, 6 years ago, I was the Grand Historian Archivist. And that was in part because of my earlier books.
Okay.
In terms of all the background work that I've done. And in part because of my family connections 65 years ago. Where my great uncle, who was like my surrogate grandfather, was right. Supreme Grand Master. So I sort of come from, I guess you would say, Masonic royalty. with that and $7.50, my wife says I always can get a latte at Starbucks. But it did help. But what was happening is the chancellor, he had a big flood. And in essence, all of the records were kept down in the basement. Mm-hmm. And we retrieved as much as we could. And these records went back, as I say, there was 150 years record just sitting in the basement, unarchived. And really, it was by chance that I came across these. And they weren't ruined by water or other things to the point that, a lot of them are disintegrating, but I realized it took me about a year to realize there was a hidden meeting between the Sovereign Grand Commander and the Supreme Grand Master of Canada.
There's a lot of people in the chat room. I'm going to, for everybody in the chat room, thank you so much for joining in. We're going to ask those questions in a little bit, but definitely this, the book that our wonderful guest Bill Mann has written, The Last Refuge of the Knights Templar, The Ultimate Secret of the Pike's Letter. One thing that I think we're going through with America right now is a lot of, because I'm from Kansas originally, and so in the Midwest, South, we take great pride in our history, and I think a lot of people don't realize the rich history that we have, good and bad. I mean, it's good and bad. Did you come across other letters or other artifacts and stuff that's in the vaults that you can't or you're nervous about releasing to the public through a book or even just through announcement? Because we've heard through Freemasonry and also Knights Templar, it's a secret society and they know everything about the history of the world and the history of the America. And so, is there stuff that still that we don't know about that may eventually come out or that we'll never see?
Well, hopefully I'll be around long enough for the next 30 years where
right.
there were things that I came across. As Supreme Grand Master, in essence, I can control that, the dissemination of that information. And I'm going to slowly let it come out because like Dan Brown writing of his book, the Da Vinci Code, which right. has a lot of flaws and a lot of faults associated to it. There was a central message, and unfortunately that central message to the Da Vinci Code got buried very quickly by so-called experts that on behalf of the Vatican and the Church.
So, right.
I really don't want that to happen. Also, as you say, you're from Kansas.
Right.
Being Supreme Grand Master, Knights Templar, and being involved in other Masonic organizations, I have a great relationship with Masons and Knights Templar, Grand Encampment, Knights across all of North America. And when we go to Preceptory, which is Lodge, when we go to we don't talk politics. And I just want the information to be put out there in a way that the reader can decide for themselves.
Right.
As you say, there's a rich history. There's a rich history to Canada. Also, there's a rich history to British North America, which we should be all aware of. There are bad things and there are good things. The one thing I can say is I think when you try to rewrite history or eliminate history, obviously you set yourself up to repeat history.
Which
I think we
now
have to learn from our lessons.
Yeah, I was going to say what you're seeing now. And I think it's important to really know true history. Well, the book is centered around the notion that the Templar treasure, which I'm excited because we've talked about the treasure before, was moved to a final refuge somewhere in the Midwest, American Midwest. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because we've heard, you know, some has been found, or you know, it's hidden and or going to be used for the next Civil War. And so we've heard so many different things. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, much to my own surprise, the information that I developed and the research that I developed and completed really led me through a whole series. And we're talking about a lifetime of
right.
living Freemasonry and being interested in the esoteric and arcane, led me to a spot within, as you say, the Midwest mm-hmm. of the states. Interesting enough, I speculated within the book and within other books, non-fictional books, that this was the final place of the lost gold mines of King Solomon. And so we're talking about the Egyptians and the Hebrews coming to America mm-hmm. In pre-Christian times. Interesting enough, I've been contacted by a mining company
really?
that is based on my book. They surveyed 8,000 acres of the land surrounding the area that I pinpointed, and they have determined that in essence there's the largest silver and gold deposit that's been unmined to date.
Wow.
That exists within the world. So, you know, it's interesting. You put together history, you put together the esoteric, and all of a sudden it pinpoints an area that's confirmed through modern day geological work and assay work to the point that we believe that we've uncovered the lost gold mines of King Solomon.
That, oh, wow, that would be amazing. And for correction for me, I got the Confederate money mixed up with the Templar money, Templar treasure, but I referred back to the National Treasure, which is the movie that I love, and they were talking about North Dakota, close to the Mount Rushmore, is in the movie itself.
What you may find interesting, Tony, is the first book that I wrote, The Knights Templar in the New World, and speculated that Knights Templar brought the Templar treasure in the pre-Columbian times.
Really?
Wow. And really moved that treasure across North America to its final refuge or resting place. But you'll remember at the start of the first National Treasure movie,
right?
About the little boy who is in the attic and his grandfather,
Mike,
essentially explains to him the history of his family.
Right.
Well, that is, in essence, is essentially taken out of my first book. I explained when I was about 12, I ended up in the hospital. I almost lost my right eye, and
really?
my great uncle at the time asked me if I wanted to see a secret of his, and promised me that he would show it and talk about our family and our background if I got out of the hospital, which I did. And ultimately, he showed me his secret ring, a secret compartment in a ring, and based on the geometry that was reflected in that ring, I was able to put together all of this sort of reverse journey across North America.
Well, one thing that I'm also big into, I love Native American history. I got to the honor to interview the great grandson of Geronimo, and so he made such an impact on my soul because of the spirituality and the forgiveness that they have towards the white man. But you're talking about the Native Americans are still the guardians of the Templar treasures, and they formed a holy alliance with the Templars. Why would, you know, many forgive, but many don't forget. Why would they make an alliance when so many other white men have turned their back and destroyed their almost culture completely? Why would they accept that challenge or accept that honor?
Well, here's a very interesting thing. My mother is full-blooded Algonquin Indian.
Ah.
So, in essence, through the genealogical work and oral traditions that I continue, I've been able to demonstrate that I'm sort of living proof of that strategic alliance. Why did they form that strategic alliance? Mm-hmm. Because when the Knights Templar came to North America originally in the 11th and 12th century,
right,
they displayed the signs, seals, and tokens representative of a higher level of knowledge and understanding, which in essence the Native Americans also recognized. So over the last 20 years, I've been initiated into what is known as the Old Madewin, another secret society, but a Native North American secret society. It's known as the Grand Medicine Society of the Ojibwe and Algonquin. And really what I've experienced over time through the ceremonies and other traditions is there's proof that the alliance was formed. And there's a nobleness to, obviously, there's a reflection of the Native North American creed and code. There's a nobleness to the task that they've taken on as guardians of the treasure itself.
Well, what is the treasure itself? Is this, you know, is it just gold that has been, you know, accumulated for thousands of years? Is it from Egypt? Is it from, where is it actually from? Because a lot of people hear the treasure, but what is the treasure? I mean, is it knowledge, or is it gold?
It's absolutely, it's a lot of things. People ask me, what is the Templar treasure? And I say, what do you think it is? And when people say to me, it's gold and silver, well, that's one level you can think about it.
Right.
But the ultimate treasure is a higher level of knowledge and understanding, which leads to wisdom. A knowledge that was perpetuated from before the Great Flood. In Freemasonry, it's known as the knowledge that was preserved on the two pillars of the temple. It's the knowledge, is the wisdom of King Solomon.
Right.
It's the knowledge which allowed the Knights Templar to circumnavigate the world in the 11th and 12th century. That's what really the treasure is. And I feel so fortunate to be able to just have been given a glimpse of that knowledge.
So I can understand of keeping a treasure when it comes to monetary, you know, gold, silver, whatever it is, from, you know, humans, because we get pretty greedy. But why not share that knowledge if it can help save humanity, if it can help create a better world? So why that knowledge? Why wouldn't you share with that with the world?
Well, I am, and there are a number of like-minded people around the world that are doing the same. But as reflective in a number of fictionalized books, including my own, there are those, including the church, that would like to suppress that knowledge.
Yeah, of course.
Because Sorry?
I said, of course, they make a lot of money.
Exactly. So, you know, to disseminate that knowledge all at once, it's over time. We're in a period where people have to open their minds and be accepting of what is out there and be accepting that. You talk to a lot of people. A lot of people think that 5,000 years ago, there were still people running around beside dinosaurs.
Right.
So, you know, it has to be disseminated very gradually, and it's almost a revolution, a knowledge revolution out there, and it's coming out. Unfortunately, as I say, there's a lot of politics being played right about now, which is really not conducive to being receptive to that sort of open, that type of knowledge.
Well, I always tell, I mean, I'm very proud of it. I'm a big family tree buff. I love my family history. And my mother never knew her real mother. Like she left when she was a year old. So we just didn't know. But then when out of nowhere, when my mom was like 60 some years old, her sister, well, a half sister found my mom and said, here I am. And it opened up a whole new side of the family for me, which for, you know, somebody that loves studying family history was awesome. But I came to find out that my seventh great grandfather was Richard Stockton, who was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. And I found out he was a Freemason. But the Templar treasure do you think the original signers of the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, founding fathers, were they a part of the ones that made the decision of hiding the treasure, or you know, Thomas Jefferson? Who was in charge of that decision?
Actually, the hiding of the treasure happened in the 14th century.
Oh wow! So way
a fellow named Prince Henry Sinclair,
right,
which led over 500 Knights Templar across North America and established the Last Refuge. They were descendants of the original nine knights which discovered the treasure underneath the ruins of King Solomon during the First Crusades. What's really interesting, you talk about genealogy in terms of discovering who you are. I've been working on my genealogy for over 25 years. And I find that on the man side, I'm actually descended in many ways from those original nine Knights Templar,
really?
which also go back, amazing. those families go back in 1,000 years to the original Jewish high priests of the temple. And so the whole notion is that the nine original knights, they knew exactly what they were looking for, and they knew exactly where to find it. Essentially, there was a ruse of them being protectors of pilgrims to Jerusalem. But the underlying reason to the First Crusades was to allow these nine knights to essentially dig under the Temple of Solomon and rediscover the temple treasure.
Do you think the Lewis and Clark expedition, do you think that was searching for the treasure, or do you think they were hiding the treasure or helping? I don't know. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Well, you talked about the founding fathers,
right.
George Washington and Benjamin Franklin. They at least had an inkling of the Templar treasure.
Okay.
And they were given that inkling when they were ambassadors to France. One of the other ambassadors to France was Thomas Jefferson before he became president of the United States.
Right.
He at least was given an inkling of where the last refuge of the Knights Templar lay in the Midwest states. And he really instructed Meriwether Lewis to not go and rediscover the treasure, but to scout around and check up to see if the area had been disturbed and whether the treasure was really still intact or whether it had been absconded with through a number of venues.
Well, I'm going to look through just a quick. I have some more questions, but I'd love to include our chat room. what you may know this, may not, because I'm sure you do, but was Abraham Lincoln a Mason, and who did he, if he was, what did he, who, what lodge or what did he belong to? Do you know that?
I don't think Lincoln was a Mason.
Really? I'm surprised.
He was from Indiana, I believe. But I don't think he was a Mason. I think his family was associated with Freemasonry, but I don't know if he himself was.
What did Albert Pike say about Prince Hall Freemasonry?
Well, Prince Hall Freemasonry is in essence the black version of Freemasonry. It was identified, and what's really interesting, Prince Hall Freemasonry was the first Freemasonry established in the Nova Scotia in the mid-1700s. It's an affiliation, and obviously because of the color barrier at the time, there was a separate Freemasonry. But just last year, it's really interesting, not only the Grand Encampment and Knights Templar of the United States, but the Sovereign Great Priory of Canada, we both recognize formally the Prince Hall affiliate, the Grand Encampment and Knights Templar in the States.
Well, that's great. I love that one. This one, SK says, found out about your guest while researching the book Freemasonry and the Ancient Gods. Could ask Bill if he knows of African natives with the treasure. What about that?
Not African natives, Native Americans, but not African natives.
Maybe that's what they meant. Let's see. There's some others, but the thing about this, I think, because the Freemasonry and Knights Templar, they have, you know, it's, I would say you're pretty open about everything. I think it's just people have to really listen to. I mean, you're very for, you know, with your books and just saying, here's the information. But I think that's why Freemasonry may get a bad rap. But didn't they talk, even George Washington talk about, infiltrations from other organizations into the Freemasonry? Was that the same with Knights Templar?
No, absolutely it is. And you know what? It's really interesting. When I joined the Lodge 25 right. years ago, I always knew that I would join because of my family background.
Right.
But, you know, with family and with a career and things, that you just put it off, and you know when the time is right. When I joined, it was still a very secretive society. I always like to say Freemasonry and Knights Templar is not a secret society. They're just a secretive society. I also like to say I knew more secrets. I had more secrets when I belonged to a frat house in university than I do in Freemasonry. But, you know, people ask me, how can you talk so openly? Well, in essence, one of the reasons that I was elected Supreme Grand Master of Canada, and it's evident around the world, is that Freemasonry is dwindling. Freemasonry is not seen as a brotherhood or fraternity to those young people that really need to join. And one of the reasons, and I've been sort of given the green light, is to talk more openly about it, because I've been able to convince some of the older fellas that if you don't talk about it, if you don't make its values available to a larger population, then it's going to die off. And that's what we're finding with Knights Templar here in Canada. The numbers are dwindling just through attrition and through normally what the if you go the normal route in Freemasonry, it would take you 50 years to belong to the Sovereign Great Priory of Canada to become a Knights Templar, because it's seen as that higher order. But now I'm trying to convince the Masons that in order for the fraternity to continue, that you should open it up. There's a lot of benefits to younger people in terms of Freemasonry, but Freemasonry also has to change. It can't continue the way it is.
How does the church itself, because you know it started off as a partnership, if I remember right, and then it kind of went sour, and that's the reason, you know, the almost elimination of all Knights Templar at one time by the Catholic Church. How is the relationship with the Freemasonry and the Church now? Because I know they don't care about your religious beliefs, I believe. I know they're. Could you explain that a little bit more and tell me how is that relationship with the Church now?
Well, as you identified in the Vatican, the Pope,
right,
formalized the order. The Knights Templar started out as essentially the fighting guard of the Pope himself, and they answered only to the Pope, and they were formalized in 1129 AD. Then, as you indicated, on Friday the 13th, October the 13th, right, 1307, the King of France, along with the Pope, Pope Clement V, conspired to eliminate the order, and they were outlawed. But a lot of people don't realize that 10 years later, there was a papal bull essentially rescinding that outlaw order, per se, and recognized the Knights Templar once again. Currently, Freemasonry is seen as a brotherhood, a fraternity by the Church, and nothing more. A lot of people are still looking under rocks for conspiracy theories.
Right.
But it's still just seen as a male organization, a fraternity, per se. And this is why I fictionalized the work. As I say, the Church has been going for 2,000 years. Knights right. Templar be going for 1,000 years. It's hard to break away from historic norms.
Well, before we get out of here, you're always so interesting, Bill. I love having you on the show. Always bring new information and even taking stuff we've talked about before and just making it fresh. But do you ever plan on doing your own, not only your research, but do you ever plan on getting your pick and shovel and try to go out and try to find the treasure yourself?
Actually, I have a very good friend, Scott Walter. I don't know if you ever had him.
He's one of my favorite persons in the world.
Yeah. Well, I convinced Scott to become a Freemason.
Scott is Scottish, right?
Yeah. And through that, it's really opened up a lot of things to Scott, where I would try to explain to him. So both Scott and I, we sort of kid around that we're going to go with our pick and shovel looking for this stuff. But I always say to Scott, you're going to be the first one going down the hole. I'm not
right.
going down the hole first.
Well, let's say that you guys did go and you found it. What would you do with it?
Well, that's the biggest question. People always ask me that question also. Who does it really belong to?
Right.
And I always say, well, it belongs to humanity, society. I know that sounds kind of corny, but, you know, the problem is that there's a lot of people that are going to try to lay claim to the so-called treasure.
Right.
Everybody from the Church to the American government to the royal family, the British royal family, other French royalty, Spanish royalty, everybody's going to be lined up making a claim. The Knights Templar of Canada, the Grand Encampment of the USA. who knows? But the whole thing is it's like, should we let sleeping dogs lie, or should we really go after the treasure per se itself?
What do you think would be part of that treasure would be the most interesting for you? Not let's say not even the, you know, the riches itself when it comes to the gold. You walk in, you see just, you know, a whole room of just silver, gold, but what would you probably look for the most if you could walk in on that?
I would look for the ancient writings that speak to
too.
The knowledge. And as I say, before the Great Flood, it would be really interesting to understand what man was thinking about prior to the Great Flood, 5,000 years ago. Did they have the technological advancement that we're only experiencing now? That to me would be the most fascinating thing. The comprehension, the knowledge that they possess would be tremendous.
Well, you're a treasure. You're one of the treasures, I think. You and Scott are, like I said, treasures that we need. Because a lot of us people, we just want to talk about it. We want to hear about it, but we don't actually go out and do our own research. And that's why I started Truth Be Told like 6 years ago, for the fact is I always say, you know, Bill's truth is not necessarily my truth, but until I do my own research and seek that truth, I'm a Sagittarius, seeker of truth. You can't really know what's going on when it comes to the true history of the world, not necessarily just America. So thank you for doing what you do.
You're very welcome. My wife happens to be a Sagittarian, and I'm a Leo. They say that's
happy birthday.
the best combination ever.
Happy. When's your birthday?
August the 3rd.
Well, happy belated. And
well, thank you.
I'm heading to Kansas to spend my dad's 85th birthday. His birthday is this Saturday. So another Leo. And so I enjoy Leos.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Bill, thank you so much. People can go to templarsnewworld.com. You can go to Amazon, pick up the book. Read it. It's so interesting. And Bill, as always, thank you so much for being a part of Truth Be Told. I know Captain Ron really wanted to be here to ask these questions, but he had to work and make some money. So, all right. Well, thank you guys. I really appreciate you for joining us. Thank you for asking the questions and participating. Please share the show, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. We'll be back next week. Just keep an eye out for our next show. And until then, I'm Tony Sweet with Captain Ron for Truth Be Told. Take care.